You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. So if you need batteries for your truck, batteries for your trail cameras, TV remote controls, flashlights, you name it, Interstate Batteries has what you need. They have thousands of retail locations all over the United States. So stop in, talk to a battery specialist, or for more information, visit interstatebatteries.com.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you. Welcome back to a Land and Legacy Podcast. Guys, this is part one of a two-part podcast, and this is all about turkey season, the opening weekend, or opening week of Missouri season 2020. We are so excited for this time frame. This is just a season that we look forward to because it's a completely different setup from deer season. There's a lot of community camaraderie, sharing of hunts, guests coming in, and just the turkey action is live. It is fun. It is energetic. It's heart pounding. And we're pumped to be able to share that with you guys. So we have a kind of a cool little setup for these next couple podcasts that we've got going on. Since this is a part one podcast, Seth Harker and I are hunting tomorrow morning is open day. So you're going to hear from Seth and I on this podcast, but you're also going to hear from Adam and Chad, another team going out, and they're going to be hunting a completely different farm, completely different setup, different scouting, different management on that farm. It is more ag and cattle dominated compared to what Seth and I are hunting, which is his lease, and that is very timber-dominated, as well as food plots. And so we've got two different setups. Today, part one, we're going to go over what's been done to these farms, how they've been scouted, and what some of the techniques that are going to be used, or strategies, hunting strategies, that are going to be used tomorrow, opening day. We've got great weather, but you're going to hear from both of us for the different farms, the different strategies, and then next week, part two, will hopefully be a recap of successful hunts that we've had. So, you guys are going to hear kind of a before and an after opening day here with this new two-part podcast that we're going with for this week. So, be sure to follow along next week. But hopefully this week's podcast will give you lots of good information of how we've prepared, what the game plan is, and you guys can get excited along with us. But first, got to give a shout out to Vortex Optics. Adam and I carry Vortex with us wherever we go consulting, but especially this time of the year. Vortex Optics are on our chest when we are running and gunning, turkey hunting across Missouri, because a lot of times people just think of optics for deer hunting and which buck is this, which buck is that. Well, sometimes it's just so darn thick, or we're in large open views, cropland, farmland, cattle country, that we need to find out if that is exactly birds that we're seeing. So we carry Vortex Optics with us. Be sure to go out and give them a like on their social media pages, follow along, but also check out all their cool, sweet products at vortexoptics.com. I have got the man, the myth, the legend on the line with me today, Mr. Seth Turkey Killing Harker. How are you?
Good. How are you, Matt?
Man, I'm doing good. I know that you are jazzed up. I am pumped up because today is the day before Missouri turkey season opens up for 2020. How pumped up are you? How excited?
I'm pumped up. Second holiday in Missouri. The first one, deer season, is the second.
That is so very true. Definitely true. I think that this podcast is kind of going to be a little bit of a semi-live podcast for everyone who's listening. So tomorrow's game plan, roughly, is you and I are going to hunt together, and I got to hunt on your lease. And then Adam and Chad are going to a different property about 50 minutes away that's been scouted. And yours have a little bit different of scouting techniques. But what we're going to talk about is kind of some of the preseason work that's been done, as well as some of the preseason scouting that has gone into or leading up to turkey season. And with this setup, because Adam and Chad are going to be on later on the same podcast here, talking about what they've done. And they're really two different approaches. And so let's just get right into kind of our thoughts for the morning, where you want to specifically start. And then we'll break down, okay, here's how we've gotten to that conclusion of this is the starting point. This is what we've done in the area. Here's what we think is happening based on the information we've gathered. And this is how we've gathered that information. Because I think a lot of times, although you can go into turkey hunting just completely blind because they're very vocal first thing in the morning, you know, you can just roll up to a property and be like, all right, well, we're going this way. But when you do have many more pieces of the puzzle put together, like we're going to talk about, success definitely goes up. And so, Seth, what's kind of the game plan for first thing in the morning?
So, basically, been really busy with work. Haven't had a lot of the time to take the mornings and go listen. So, we're just relying on, number one, on history. Mm-hmm. History is always one of your best game plans that you could ever have, especially if you've hunted that property for several years like we have.
Yep.
History seems to repeat itself. I mean, if the habitat, you know, has not changed, or maybe you've changed it for the better, those hens are typically going to be nesting in traditional spots.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got the soybeans and the corn like we have, we've got some leftovers. And the turkeys seem to be around those. Same way with the clover. So we know where those food sources are. We know where the nesting habitat is, and we kind of know the history of the property. Minus the current thing that we have done, that I was really interested to see how that changed the turkey pattern, because it was a heavy, heavy edge feathering that we did.
Yes. Yes.
On one of the properties. So I was like, man, because you go through there, there are only select spots that they can cross in and out of these primary food sources from nesting and cover and so on and so forth. I mean, it's almost made little pinch points, if you will.
Absolutely. And that's one of those things, you know, to kind of lay out that scene is on this one property that had a lot of the edge feathering done on one of the large ridgetop fields. I mean, it's a big field complex, and you've hunted it for years successfully, turkeys and deer. But now, essentially, with the edge feathering project that was just completed, you took a big field and probably made a hunt much, much smaller. You had corridors that would go, you know, through it and kind of break up and funnel some corridor, you know, type activity. But now it's a lot more condensed and probably a little bit easier to hunt, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. And the cutty lengths, we've got cameras around all those particular spots. And mm-hmm. I mean, it is, I'm just telling you, it's defined how the deer, not only the deer, but the turkeys as well are entering. And I mean, it just really made it easier where those deer and turkey are going to enter and exit the field naturally. I'm not saying when you spook them and they run out, obviously they'll run through those tops, but
sure.
For a natural, when they're naturally coming in and out, obviously they have there's some hot spots around that field, and if you're there, you're going to be in the hot spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you again, this is one of those places where you'd probably start anyhow listening from if you had no prior knowledge to the farm. You'd probably just start and listen at this general location where we're talking about, this kind of larger field complex, and there'll be birds roosted on probably every side of it. However, with that new habitat feature of the edge feathering, an aggressive edge feathering, we'll probably see some of it in the footage of hunting and everything, so people can visually understand what it is we're talking about. But once you know that, you have really cut down on where these turkeys are coming in and out at. And like you said, you place these Cuddy Link cameras and they're sending you updates. And the updates, I think you actually posted something on Facebook the other day, is like scouting from work. And here's a train of like six or seven longbeards just walking right there in front of the camera. And when they're coming in and out, whether they're coming to a call or going to a call or going to roost, coming off the roost, whatever it may be, it is going to be pretty well defined in and out there. And then I think when you do have that knowledge of the property and go straight to a topography standpoint of when we're looking outside of the field, where are the little points, where are the little ridges, where are the benches outside of this ridge complex where we think turkeys are going to be just naturally roosted. Well, I'm not going to say it's not fair, but you can pretty much narrow down if you understand how turkeys are going to primarily work those terrain features in and out of that field. It makes a lot of sense where you're going to set up and where you're going to choose not to set up. I think it puts a bullseye on several places just right out of the gate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another reason why, I mean, scouting is important, because I'm just telling you, as heavy as it is, if you were just to show up on that property and not know where those entry and exit points are in there, I mean, it could hose you on the hunt because, oh, there's a hot turkey. He's on the other side of that edge feather. I'll assure you, there's places you're not going to call that bird through. He's not coming through.
I know you've experienced it many, many times. Actually, we've had a hunt where you and I experienced
160.
It. The 160.
Yeah, 160. Oh. I remember. Yeah.
We worked and worked and worked this bird for, I want to say it was a couple hours, and it was just, the bird was hot, and it was late in the morning, and we were Jake yelping, we were gobbling at the turkey with the diaphragm calls, and this turkey would just not break, and it would not come, but there was a large dozer deck that was in the way, and it could not mentally figure out how to get around this, and we were so pinched and locked in. We couldn't do anything. It's like we can't move around it ourselves because of property line issues. And so that hunt,
right,
it was cool. There was a lot of gobbling involved. The bird was close, but it just didn't work. It didn't happen. Yeah. And because of the habitat or a slight change, but that's where the scouting and proper planning and placement of these edge feathering appropriately really, really helps.
Right, and we learned later, or I learned at the last week of season, that their natural crossing was back up to the north where they wanted to enter into that, and that would have been more of our strategy, to stay up there where they're comfortable, and that's their normal. I mean, when you want to kill a turkey, the best way to kill a turkey, obviously, calling is a great way, and we've all had those times where you just hammer them and it takes 2 or 3 hours to finally get them to break. But I will say this, it is much easier to call a turkey to where he's familiar and where he wants to be.
Yes.
So much easier.
And very much. Very much so.
We use the Cuddy Links, and we use the history that we know. And then there again, to hit on it again, I mean, I was sitting there, wow, when you go up to that edge feathering, you look, it looks like someone took, you know, a tornado just perfectly went around the outline of those fields.
Right.
And I'll be straight with you, it crossed my mind, man, is this going to hurt my turkey, honey?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it crossed my mind, and I thought, oh, that's ridiculous, food's here and everything. Well, the Cuddy Link showed us that it wasn't hurting, but it was actually helping me learn. I mean, I know where to set. I mean,
right.
I know where tomorrow morning, where you and I and Trace is actually going to tag along with us.
Good.
He's not, obviously, he's tagged out, but he's going to tag along, and we know right where we need to start.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a feeling and hope, good Lord willing, we're going to have a really good hunt in the morning.
Oh man, yeah. I really think that. But what you're talking about is a common thought of, man, I've just done something drastic to the habitat. You know, am I going to experience it? It's such a big change to me. How's the wildlife that typically are utilized in this area? How are they going to react to such a drastic change? And through the cutting link cameras and putting them placing them appropriately, you've seen a ton of turkeys. I don't know how many turkeys we're going to hear in the morning on the roost gobbling. We're talking just gobblers, but it's going to be a lot. And that drastic of a change in the way that field and movement's going to be, it hasn't slowed down activity at all. And I think it's only going to help, one, the hunting of it, but two, also nesting opportunities, brood rearing cover as turkeys are working along the edge and quick darting into cover with canopy over top of them. I think you're going to see more successful raising of turkeys in and around that larger field complex because of that work. But initially, yeah, it's like, holy crap, I've just changed a lot. But man, yeah. Alive, it's going to be really, really good. I'm excited just to be there at sunrise and listen to the morning wake up, because it's going to probably be one of those, I'm hoping, let's say, it's going to be one of those loudmouth mornings and they're just gobbling and hammering pretty hard. But this kind of, let's say, scouting strategy in comparison to just listening, like let's say, because I think, you know, you're at least typically can be on the way to some job sites and stuff like that. You might be working. You could have potentially gone and listened and heard where birds are roosted. But again, if that's all the scouting that you're doing, you still could have set up in the exact wrong place. But the combination of history and the changes that have occurred in the cameras really helped to solidify a solid game plan for the morning. And one thing you talked about was the extra grain left over from the soybeans and the corn that you guys planted last year. I mean, that one,
right.
The weeds that are out there, the ability for the birds to be able to strut, have a clear strut zone, you know, is super, super important. And there also is a food supply out there. And in addition to that, there's pockets of clover around the outside of the field too, in the right areas, high traffic areas. So there's ample opportunity for birds to be on the ridge, gobbling, broadcasting their sound, coming out into the fields where it's actually short. Adam and I were just in Oklahoma, and we dealt with fields that were extremely tall from last year's growth, whether it was warm season grasses or just giant ragweed in the bottomland. And there really was very, very little places for birds to come out to routinely,
right,
and strut. And I think that's often overlooked, truthfully, of, okay, what is a strut zone? How do I create a strut zone? But all the work that you did last year is still really benefiting a lot of things and making, hopefully, tomorrow and the rest of the season a success.
Right. And, you know, just thinking of that, I do want to add this for all the listeners out there. You know, there's been several years now, turkey populations, you know, they have kind of been on the decline in our area.
Right.
And there were several years, and I think Adam and I may have talked about this on the last podcast, but I just want to say it again, because there's a lot of people out there who think they have two turkey tags, meaning that they have to kill two male turkeys no matter what.
They'll hear that again this week from us in the podcast we recorded. So keep hitting it home.
Oh, really?
Oh, keep hitting it home. Yes, sir.
So you don't, man, if you're running cameras or maybe just your observations on your farm, you feel like the population isn't what it once was, you don't have to kill that second turkey. And we did that for several years. And I will say this. We've got the turkey numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have got plenty of turkeys to hunt. My kids get to enjoy the turkey hunt. We have other people that come in, some of the guys from Stratton. They get to enjoy the turkey hunt. And guess what? Seth doesn't have to kill his second bird.
Right.
You know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, we're getting high enough where I'm sitting there thinking, man, I may be able to shoot my second bird.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're getting to see the fruits of our labor. So that's pretty awesome. And, you you know, it's about getting to experience it with other people. It's just not about me killing both my turkeys.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the testament to that is, you know, last week's podcast, sharing about your experiences with both Trace and Carson. I mean, those were awesome experiences that, you know, by you not pulling triggers in years previous, you've been able to have incredible hunting opportunities, success, you know, to each extent with your kids. And that's fantastic. And that is truly what it is all about. And sharing those experiences, and a lot of times it comes at, let's say, a potential sacrifice. But I think you would certainly agree that in the long run, it's not a sacrifice when you can have those experiences with your kids or just other people. Amen. that you want to share the resource that you have managed so well. You want to be able to share that with people, and I think that's you've got a big heart to do that, and I think that's incredible mentality to have and share. That's what we do. Why we do kind of what we do. You know, it's not, we're borrowing it from our kids. Is kind of the deal with land, and you want to make it better, and so
right. you
letting off the trigger is a part of that.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And man, I'm excited.
Yeah, I really am too. It's bad. This is one of those days that I'm just like pumped up, because like I won't sleep that much tonight. I'll get up, I'll rush out of bed, grab coffee, throw clothes on, and I'll be like, I'm going to meet Seth. I just can't wait for that first little bit of sunrise to get set up, and then anticipation build and calling back and forth to birds, and man, it's just so much fun.
You know, historically, last couple of years or so, you and I have had great opening success. Hopefully, good Lord willing, we'll keep that momentum in the morning.
I hope so. I really would. And really, I guess last year, opening morning, we sat up on this big field, and you killed a bird right off the roost, called him pretty much right in, attacked the decoy, and pow, that was half hour after sunrise. So no, that would be great to continue later on that day. I got on a bird, or we worked that bird for a long time and killed him, I don't know, 11 o'clock or so. But man, there has been some good opening day hunts, and I think we're up for another one. And I'm excited that Trace is coming along too. It's it'll be cool, because honestly, I've been able to go with you guys in the past years for youth season, see him tag quite a few birds, and it'll be cool to be able to run and gun and move a lot with him. Hopefully tomorrow too. So, man, that'll be a blast.
Definitely. Do you remember the days where Trace, we couldn't walk 200 yards because our boy was legs weren't long enough.
Yeah,
couldn't carry nothing.
Yep.
So turkey was over here on this ridge. It's like, well, we're not getting over there. We're going to leave Trace here.
That's right. And we kind of need you to go along there, buddy.
Yeah.
No, that. A lot of cool things, and happy to have been a part of those so far, because, you know, I remember going as a youth with my dad and my brother and recalling those hunts. And I go back in my head, I'm like, how many times was I not aware, like during those moments that we were like, oh, we need to be here. But I was like, I would say I was the, maybe the weight, you know what I mean? That kind of like halted the progress, but
right.
I never in my life do I ever recall my dad or my brother, older brother by 5 years, you know, they would never be upset by that. And no, it's just part of being,
right.
It's just part of being out there. But Trace has, how old is Trace now? Like 11, 12?
Yeah, 11.
Yeah. Like, and he's not a small 11-year-old. Like he knows what he's doing. He's been in the woods a lot. Like he knows where to be quiet. So like just seeing that progression is so cool. Cause I just remember, you know, those times in my life of chasing turkeys and having similar experiences. But yeah, my mind goes back to that a lot when we hunt together during youth season.
And that's what's awesome about turkey hunting. Deer season is obviously, everybody knows, is my pick.
Right.
I love deer season and I love deer management. With that being said, really, I just kind of am seeing the value in actual turkey management.
Mm-hmm.
And the value in that is it's fun, you can hear the turkeys, and it's more of a low-key hunt to bring women and children and get them involved in the outdoors. And heck, let's just say it's a heart-pounding experience when that gobbler gets close. I mean, it's fun.
It absolutely is. Without a doubt, it is. And I think you hit on a really good point. I think for the last 30 years, after a lot of really good restocking efforts, we saw turkey numbers just climb. And it was just boom, 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 boom. Good, solid reproduction across many, many states. And I think that we're going to see a really big trend here now, Seth, and people starting to get really serious about turkey management. And that gets me really excited. Not that I want to see turkey numbers plateau or decline in any area, but what we know is that turkeys need more disturbances and they need more specific habitat types to persist and reproduce than what deer do, kind of like what we talk about with quail a lot. And so when people start to do really true turkey management on a property, like, this is a sole focus. I've seen my deer are fine, but I've seen turkey numbers decrease. Let's do stuff for turkeys. I know that good stuff, really, really quality habitat work outside of food plots and all this stuff is going to actually be what's implemented. And truthfully, that's what we need. So no, I'm not excited that turkey numbers are maybe in that trend, but I also see the benefit for the educational purposes and more habitat management being done, being completed.
Right. You know, we're traveling through Douglas County right now, here in Missouri, which we're headed to Mission. My cousin and Trey.
Yep.
They're both listening to the podcast, but while we're shooting it here. But you know, I've got a lot of family and friends that live down here in Douglas County, and they are talking about how there's parts in Douglas County where they don't even hear a gobbler anymore.
It's true.
You got to realize that Douglas County touches Wright County. Wright County is where we'll be hunting in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these guys down south, that's what we call it. It's south of Grove where we reside.
Yep.
But these guys love turkey hunting. I think some of them down here love turkey hunting more than they did deer hunting. And they do not have the turkey numbers. That is a fact across Douglas County.
Yep. It's a very downward trend in Douglas County. But as you're driving and you're looking around, you see slicked off fescue pastures and you see unmanaged hardwood timber. And that's primarily all that it is.
Exactly right.
Very little bit gets burned. And if you're driving on 95 south out of Mountain Grove, you see one of the best illustrations of prescribed fire, some timber management stuff, is some of the actual government-owned state land there along Shannon Ranch. Some of that is the best-looking turkey habitat you're going to see, and it's not in the hands of private landowners. That's why we call out a lot to private landowners, hey, we gotta be the ones to do stuff, because as you're on that trip, some of the best stuff is on the state game land right there. So,
I agree. That old hay vine, the hay vine and the fescue hurts our nest for sure.
It's definitely a domino effect of a lot of different things. But you know, you've done a fantastic job managing turkeys there on your place, and I'm super excited to be a part of a hunt tomorrow, to listen to it, to watch it all unfold, and hopefully we'll be throwing one over the shoulder and listen to just lots and lots and lots of birds gobbling and showing off. So I'm pumped for it, man. I'm excited. I'm glad Trace is coming along.
Yes, sir.
We will uh We'll do an update tomorrow, hopefully afternoon, mid-morning, whatever it is, after the hunt's concluded, and talk about specifically what it was that made that hunt successful, and kind of dissect the hunt so people can learn from it, and then maybe apply whatever techniques, whether it's calling techniques, hunting strategy, or just management techniques that were like, this is what helped make this hunt a success. So be sure to listen into part two next week, guys, as we'll recap some of these hunts and things that we have tomorrow with Mr. Seth and Trace Harker. Guys, thanks for coming on, and good luck fishing. Go catch some fish.
Yes. Thanks, Matt. I'm looking forward to it. Good Lord willing, we will see you in the morning.
All righty, guys. Take care.
See ya. Bye.
All right, guys. So Chad and I are up next. You just heard Matt and Seth talk about their big plans for in the morning. Now, Chad and I are teaming up, and we're going to a farm in an adjacent county that Seth and Matt are hunting. As you probably heard them talk about, they're in a little bit different scenario than we are. They're hunting timber ground, rec ground, no cows, not a lot of disturbance other than plant food plots and some forestry practices, but it's a farm that is producing very high turkey numbers. Then you come to where we're headed, and it's a farm that has just produced and produced and produced turkeys. And so
very high disturbance,
very high disturbance, very high turkey numbers. We'll talk about why, but first the most important thing is, so we're sitting here, what is today? The 19th, season start on the 20th. So we're sitting here the night of the 19th, calling Chad. He's at the cabin on the farm. I'm at my home about an hour away, but I'll be teaming up with you in the morning. Where are the birds roosted tonight? And second part of that question is roosted, roasted.
Well, so far for the past 3 years, they've been roosted, but not roasted right off the limb anyway. It's been, I guess both of the past 2 years, you've missed out on the midday kill. It's been hunt birds off the roost. Nothing really worked out because they're in big groups. And then come around, go eat breakfast, and come around about 10:30.
I was thinking about that. I don't know why I haven't been there all day. I think last year I had real estate duties, and I remember in March when our broker was asking us days off so we didn't get assigned floor days. I said Matt sent in the dates for us, and then I added, take the 20th and the 21st off there. And he goes, ooh, good call. And so we get to hunt all day till 1 o'clock if we want. So, if it's needed, but,
we have birds roosted though. At least.
That's awesome.
They did.
So
multiple groups, I guess
this area is kind of, we've killed birds there around this area in the past. It's kind of a, you know, since we're hunting a cattle farm, this farm particularly is mostly open, and that varies from either grazed pasture to kind of a winter feedlot to crop field, tillable acres, and then of course some kind of scattered wood pockets.
Yeah, it's a majority open ground.
What do you think? 80-20, 70-30, somewhere in there probably?
Probably at least.
Yeah, and so it's mostly open. I think there's a lot of guys that can relate to this of hunting turkeys on cattle farms is, you know, there could be a chance that there's high turkey numbers, but there's also a good chance that it's going to be hard to maneuver around, and that's probably one of my biggest complaints about this farm is everywhere you go, it feels like you're exposed or have the chance to be exposed.
Well, and especially where the turkeys are at this year. Generally, they're on the big field that's a cover-cropped corn silage and one-half corn silage, one-half alfalfa. And generally, that's pretty short. And the
because they cut the alfalfa sometime right now. And so that first cutting of alfalfa, now it's short.
This year, they drilled it in, they cover cropped it into rye, and they, like 2 days ago, cut the rye for baleage. So it's short, but the turkeys haven't adjusted. So they're on the other side of the property, which is nowhere near as easy to maneuver around.
That's grazed pasture.
Yeah, it's all grazed pasture. The big field has a creek that's like 8 foot deep, like an 8 foot deep bank that's dry.
It's a wonderful, wonderful way to get through the property.
The side that the turkeys are on this year is not going to be as easy to maneuver around.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think, when we're talking about this farm and kind of the strategy is, there's multiple birds or some right off the property on some neighboring pieces, but for the most part, because of historical hunts, we kind of have an idea where you didn't even have to be up there, and we could have probably been on a bird still on the limb tomorrow morning, but because you were up there, we should be hopefully set up with decoys out so they don't have to do a whole lot before they fly down and see decoys. Talk to me a little bit about how short the pasture is that's been grazed. Now, there's two different pastures, and there's one area we call Death Valley that's just always had turkeys in it, but I wouldn't necessarily call it completely overgrazed. It's always had, 10 to 16 inch.
Most of the pastures on this place aren't
overgrazed.
I mean, they're decently tall. I mean, somewhere around 6 inches tall. They've all been grazed. Nothing's real thick and rank.
Yeah.
So the turkeys.
And then nothing's real super short either. And there's always clover mixed in, and a couple other forbs that you'll find. But we're saying all this because there's kind of a correlation where the turkeys bounce around the cows, especially later in the season as the grass, the pasture grass grows up taller. The turkeys kind of almost chase those cows around following the short grass, following that disturbance.
Yeah, that's the ones tonight. We're in the pasture that I saw. There's two donkeys in the field.
Uh-oh.
And I think I saw at least, I could see something black over to one edge that wasn't turkeys. I never got around to that edge of the pasture to see, but I did see two donkeys out there because I looked at them through binoculars.
Gotcha.
At one point.
Well, maybe they'll make a turkey gobble.
Yeah, I never heard them. They never made any noise.
Oh man. Well, hopefully they will mind their own business and we can mind our own business. We don't have to deal with any livestock tomorrow morning. But it's kind of the price you pay whenever you're hunting a cattle farm.
Yeah.
And so, let's talk a little bit about we've talked about the strategy, but let's talk a little bit about why turkey numbers are so high based on our observations and our opinions and what we see on this farm. I think cattle farming gets a bad rap, and there's some validity to that where, there's some really bad cattle farms out there as far as going to be able to produce wildlife and kind of work hand in hand with wildlife numbers. But this farm in particular has kind of a different, they do things a little bit differently than most people. It's a little bit bigger operation. I mean, the guy's a full-time farmer, his dad's a full-time farmer. And what they do is, they've got dairy cows as well as beef cows. And instead of just doing pastures, cool season pastures like smooth brome or tall fescue in particular on this farm, it's kind of a mix of, they've got corn that they cut for silage. They also have the cover crop. I don't think I've seen them not cover crop. And so you've got spilled corn, and then you have cover crop, which is, sometimes it's been turnips and wheat. Other times it's been turnips and cereal rye. And then, of course, the moneymaker, the one that you and I in particularly love, is the alfalfa fields.
Yeah.
And those alfalfa fields, I mean, Kyle and Frank talk a lot about I think they have on a podcast anyway, about the attractiveness of alfalfa bringing in insects. And you guys have heard Mike Chamberlain, Brett Collier talk about brood rearing and things that they need and how number one diet for them is bugs. And those that disturbance through cattle grazing, through planting. And Chad told me pre-show that this area that was cereal rye that just got cut 2 days ago is getting planted in corn probably tomorrow or the next day. So there's going to be corn out there. And so there's constantly a disturbance that's occurring. And through that disturbance, there's annual weeds that are going to grow up. There's bare ground or cattle trails that then once the cows are removed, you get a lot of annual weeds growing there. You get clover mixed in. You get alfalfa mixed in. The woods aren't grazed a lot. There's a couple patches of woods that are, but a lot of the woods are either just fenced off or the cows just don't go into them that much because there's plenty of grass out in the fields. And so there's not a real use and abuse type approach. And then what hardwoods are there? There's a really, I think one thing that really shocks me on this whole farm is the amount of acorns. There you go for you guys that complain so much. The amount of acorns that are produced in such a small amount of timber and how attractive they are to the deer herd to where, you know, if it's 20 or 30% of this farm and they have a good acorn crop, deer stop using the crop fields significantly going to
those. You'll see very little movement on like very lush alfalfa. You'll see very few deer when there's a lot of acorns.
And it's just very strange.
They completely stop, which they have a ton of bur oak and actually I see multiple swamp white oaks, which both produce huge acorns.
Yep. Yeah.
So, and you talked about the turkey population, but this place also has enough that you hear a lot of quail in the spring turkey hunting too.
That's right. That was another point of definitely. And, you know, quail don't just happen by accident usually. Like if they're there, there's something that's attracted to them to where they stay there. Because if it was just a sterile piece of ground, they'd probably go elsewhere or they would die. And this farm always has quail on it, and they don't do anything for quail. It just they happen by normal farming practices, constant disturbance.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's kind of the approach. Tomorrow morning we're going to be taking all those things into consideration when we're hunting this farm. It's always a definitely a, you know, here's the plan, but because it's a working cattle farm, plans change very quickly. If we're set up and cows show up, it's yank the decoys or let's move around and go somewhere where the cows aren't.
It's kind of a change for us. I guess it's part of why there's a lot of turkeys too, but I enjoy it because it's different. It's a different type of hunting than we grew up doing. I mean, we've grown up, we did hunt pasture and cattle farm, but predominantly a lot more timber hunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the exact opposite. Our farm is more.
This is a 60. Majority field. You're expecting to deal with turkeys in the fields.
Yeah. No fanning. That's one thing I'll promise you won't happen tomorrow is there'll be somebody crawling behind a fan. Because we're not the only people that get to hunt this farm. So, it's definitely going to be a fun morning, hopefully. Another thing
that's going to be really good.
Weather's going to be great. Weather is going to be great. I know there's an unspoken competitive spirit that's occurring tomorrow with Matt and Seth on theirs and you and I up there. I think they probably have the advantage because they have trail cameras out that are like, oh, they're here every morning. But we also, I guess, have an advantage because we can see a lot more. So we know basically we're going to see turkeys tomorrow. It's just whether or not we can coax them into range.
Yeah, which I told you a little bit. I did see at least six different Jakes, two groups of three.
Really?
Around, like, on their own. Huh. So, hopefully we don't fall for what we did last year.
Bully Jakes.
Good goblin bully Jakes that we set up on and call all the way in and realize it's a bunch of bully Jakes.
Yeah. Huh. Well, hopefully we don't have to deal with them, but, you know, it's good to deal with Jakes because we know we got a good population of turkeys.
Yep.
They're hopefully going to make it next year. Yeah, I know I'm definitely excited, and for this hunt, it's kind of opening day turkey season is very it means a lot because turkey hunting has probably been more of a thrill for us through our life because turkey numbers have been a lot better than deer numbers. And so it's what year was that? 2000, that would have been 2017. You and I doubled up on opening day on this farm, actually. But it was a mid-morning hunt. It wasn't right off the roost because I think this is one thing, too, that dealing with large numbers of turkeys is you also deal with a better chance of henned up turkeys. And this farm has kind of always been that where, I don't know, I would say mid-morning hunts are way better than fly-off-the-roost hunts on this farm.
Yeah, we've very rarely had, and it's late. If we've had a good off-the-roost hunt, it's been late, or it's been late in the season.
Yeah.
I can think of one with Matt and I.
Yep.
But
that's right. Not too far.
You guys have had a few.
Uh-huh.
When I haven't been here.
Yeah, but the ones that that have been good, we've gotten set up so close they could almost poop on us off the limb.
Yeah.
Because I think of the morning that my wife called me to tell me that we were having our baby girl Maya, that we were set up where once the sun started shining, we could look around and see all the turkeys in the trees, and they were just like, it felt like we were on in Busch Stadium, where the Cardinals play, and the fans were the turkeys. Like, they were just looking down on us in this field. It's like, uh-oh. Yeah, but we made it happen.
And that's the birds we plan on setting up on in the morning. There's a pile of turkeys.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we mentioned, I saw this group.
How many turkeys do you think there are in a flock?
Maybe 15 or 20.
Yeah. Where do you think we're at? And you think most of the turkeys are still flocked up pretty good?
These were that other group. There were two gobblers and four hens.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be somewhat grouped up still.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how many longbirds are in the group that we're going after.
Gotcha.
I saw at least three big redheads, but
so probably a half strut Jake and a hen decoy.
Yeah, I'd say that's the plan.
Cool. I know you're up to bat first. I'm going to be running the camera behind you, but you know, and that's kind of something too that I've kind of grown out of to where, yeah, it's great if two birds come in. And you shoot one and then the other one's standing there and you pass the shotgun to the other guy. But I don't think I want to do that anymore. Not with turkey numbers of the way they are. It's kind
of
like, well, if we're going to kill two birds, let's go ahead and, maybe let that one go. And then we'll go and chase another one, especially when you think about like, the research that Mike Chamberlain's done with the pecking order.
Yeah.
It's like
it kind of makes you think twice about shooting the strutter.
It does,
you know,
doesn't
it?
Now Matt and I said the same thing.
Makes you think about shooting standing off to the side.
I'm going
to
shoot the looker.
Which that's never a bad thing either.
I know.
They're generally the ones that give you the trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that same thing when I heard that. Was like, "Huh, if it takes them that long to establish a new pecking order, it kind of makes you want to go, maybe we'll just let the strutter go and we'll shoot the other one."
Yeah.
I don't know. There's definitely some great research coming out of Southeast and in the South. And I would encourage you guys, listeners, I think it'll be tomorrow. So if you're listening to this podcast when it drops on the 21st, On the 22nd, National Wild Turkey Federation Facebook page, we'll have a live event with Dr. Mike Chamberlain and Dr. Brett Collier talking about predators and turkey numbers, or in turkeys. And so I'm definitely going to try to tune in, and hopefully you guys will too. Are you going to be there, Chad?
No, I'm going to listen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they say.
I
know enough to know from those guys that they're going to tell you habitat first, predators later. But, gosh, predator and turkeys is just an ongoing, seems like every time you turn around, it's a conversation.
It's being hashed over like crazy right now because everybody's, we're getting to where most seasons are open or have been open for a while, and it's fresh on their minds, especially places where they've kind of seen the gobbling peak and they're in the lull and they're hunting that lull and not hearing much. So they're thinking that there aren't any turkeys anymore.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it motivates people to get out and do a little bit more habitat work. I don't know. We ought to make a graph or a categorize game species and then rank them out in hardest or ones that require quality land management versus ones that don't require it. You know, I think turkeys require a little bit more than deer. They don't require as much as quail. May not even require as much as rough grouse. But turkeys, I think, definitely require more than a white-tailed deer would.
Well, I mean, we could talk about this forever, but I think that a lot of the problem is we were spoiled with when we first were restocking turkeys, they exploded. So we have the mindset that it doesn't take much to keep them around and keep them at the same numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is a lot of the problem that we deal with. But.
Yep, for sure. Well, I know we're definitely going to be getting after it in the morning. Kind of a wrap up. So we're hunting a cattle farm. We're getting in an area that the cows aren't, but the cows hopefully aren't going to be standing where we want to hunt in the pasture. Hopefully they're at the other end. You know, we're going to be, since we're kind of opening day and they're still flocked up, we're going to be running a Jake decoy, half strut, and a hen decoy. We're going to be getting in close. Hopefully I'm not late. that's one of the biggest complaints I have with living this far away is like, one little thing, I can hit traffic here, I can get traffic midway, or just running late. And before you know it, you're really late. And so,
we would like to be standing there when they first gobble.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
The odds haven't been good for that.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're going to be hunting them like that, and then hopefully Chad can control his aggressive calling, right?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. So I know I'm definitely excited, and hopefully everyone out there is enjoying your turkey season if it's opened up. Hopefully you're being safe and have heard some birds. Also, for you guys that are waiting or maybe season's just getting ready to open up or you're in the north, hadn't opened up yet, hopefully you guys can get out. You know, turkey season is a great opportunity to introduce new hunters. It's a little bit more action-packed, hopefully, than deer hunting. Quick story. A couple years ago, we had Keith Hammer and Taylor Patterson from Stratton Seed Company up. They had never killed a turkey. I'm not even sure they'd ever been turkey hunting. We took them to a couple of our farms. They ended up both killing their first turkey. Completely jacked up, pumped up, excited, and were ready to continue chasing turkeys every spring. And I got a text last week, a picture with Taylor, and he'd went out. The both of them, Keith and Taylor, went to Taylor's family farm, and they'd called in a bird and killed it and did it all by themselves. And so in a matter of 2 years, they'd gone from killing their first bird to now going out and doing it on their own. So that's exactly what you're hoping for when you introduce somebody to the outdoors is, you know, you don't just have to keep taking them into your farm. You can use your farm as an opportunity to take new hunters, and hopefully you light that fire in them enough that they can go find their own ground or find a way to chase some birds or chase some animals somewhere. Maybe it is back on your farm, but at the same time, we're going to keep trying to bring in new hunters and getting them hooked on the outdoors.
I mean, especially Taylor. I mean, his first day of hunting was when we took him on an eight mile hike. We walked him to death, and he's still at it. So
yeah, we didn't necessarily do the best thing for him when we when we got out there, did we? But sure enough, we did something right because they both got hooked on it. So, man, Chad, I'm looking forward to it. Get some sleep tonight, and we'll be ready to rock tomorrow morning, guys. It's going to be a fun time, and hopefully you guys can continue to follow along on a podcast. But most importantly, right now, here's my call to action for you: is head over to our YouTube channel and click the subscribe button, please. We're dropping more and more videos, and you know, not to let the cat out of the bag, but there's a whole lot more coming, and all kinds of stuff. If you've been asking, man, I wish I could take their podcast and make it more visual so I knew exactly what they're talking about, it's coming, I can promise you that. So you guys, you've asked us to keep doing, to make videos about edge feathering and all kinds of stuff. And up until this point, I've been the one editing most of those in the last year or so, with some slate and glass films early on. But now we're going to be stepping it up. I'm not handling it, and it hopefully will be a lot better. And you guys, this should be great news for you guys. But I want to thank our partners that make this happen. You know, Stratton Seed Company's been with us from the beginning. And Stratton Seed is flying out the shelves or flying out the door, flying off the trucks. And Heritage Blend is back in stock, as well as a lot of the other seeds still going out the door, still in stock. They are sold out of Wild Game Changer 2.0 soybeans, but they've got plenty of other Heritage and Wild Game Changer 1.0s in stock, Ancestry Blend, Duck Blends, a bunch of stuff that you can find on our website, shoplandandlegacy.com, or gostrattonseed.com. Podcast wouldn't happen without them. We thank them for supporting us, and hopefully you guys will find some of their seed. You know, we're looking at affordable seed. Definitely, if you compare it to other stuff on the shelf, this is just almost feels a little bit like robbery sometimes because it is so cheap. And it's great stuff. So hopefully you guys can save some money and plant a great product. And use that money on buying a new chainsaw or something else to pour into your farm. So, guys, thanks again for listening to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We'll catch you next week. Yeah.